Good evening, dear friends. Each of you is a special blessing by your presence. So welcome, welcome. We gather together this evening to practice resurrection, to know and understand what that means. We come together in our shared intention, and our intentions, each one of them together, are multiplied by the presence of each of us. So thank you for being here. Collectively, we place ourselves individually and together under the canopy of the work and the conscious circle of humanity. So once again, we begin by remembering we're in the third week of Easter. So what does the crucifixion and the resurrection mean and tell us about our life today? Our opening reflection comes from, again, an unknown work friend. He says, "Christ's journey was a journey into the heart of real feeling. I'd like to make that journey. At least I think I want to. But every step on that path tests me, tests my resolve, tests my own arrogance. I think I am ready, but I am not. I don't actually know what it means to be ready. I assert myself in my heart and say, yes, I am ready to accept the penetration of a higher love. But I'm not ready. All I have here and all my own assumptions, my own greed for surrender. Yes, greed for surrender. I want something that I'm not ready for." Gurdjieff said as much to Ouspensky during their work together. We imagine that we want Christ as a teacher, but we are not at a level where we can have Christ as a teacher. Perhaps it is a sobering thought to point out that Christ's crucifixion is a reminder of what men do who are not at the right level to teachers that they are not ready for. So may it be so for us that we have the utmost respect for what has been given so generously to us and to all those who have given it to us and actually give us the opportunity to work. So now we place ourselves in a place of humility and immanent trust, not really knowing how we got to be here, but receptive to the influences that are coming from the conscious circle of humanity. And we prepare ourselves to receive them, to breathe in these influences as Christ breathed upon his disciples in that upper room after his crucifixion and resurrection. With back upright and heart open, in mind, in directed attention, we breathe in deeply from every most hidden part of our being. Everything that is hurt, everything that seems dark, harsh, shameful, maimed, ugly, irreparably damaged, unforgiving and unforgivable, resistant, doubting, and transubstantiate in our being all as whole, as lovely, and radiant in light, Christ-like. We do this on behalf of the world, everyone and everything, and we breathe out this healing light into the world. We hand over all the complexities of this day. We hand over all the plans for tomorrow, all the small anxieties and fears of our hearts, knowing that they are known by the one who is with us. So we lay down all that is constructed in order to yield to the divine human life that is ours in our own particularity, and we stand unencumbered before God and one another. And so it is. So in this disposition, we enter into Lectio Divina. And we prepare to listen intently to the prayer that we have been given, to the reading that we have been given from Mr. Dr. Nickel. It will be read 3 times with silence in between each reading. Give me, Nepenthe, with the lulling eyes to shut away the world, to sleep, to dream. And in this clover-scented air, slip through imprisoning time and find my spirit free. Alas, not thus shall thou escape from time. Thou wilt return again and yet again till thou hast paid the utmost farthing. Didst thou not know that time is a debtor's prison? Whom dost thou owe? Oh, not Nepenthe. Give me, Nepenthe, with the lulling eyes to shut away the world, to sleep, to dream in this clover-scented air. Slip through imprisoning time and find my spirit free. Alas, not thus shall thou escape from time. Thou wilt return again and yet again, till thou hast paid the utmost farthing. Didst thou not know time is a debtor's prison? Whom dost thou owe? Oh, not Nepenthe. Give me Nepenthe with the lulling eyes to shut away the world, to sleep, to dream in this clover-scented air, slip through imprisoning time and find my spirit free. Alas, not thus shall thou escape from time. Thou wilt return again and yet again, till thou hast paid the utmost farthing. Didst thou not know time is a debtor's prison? Whom dost thou owe? Owe not Nepenthe. Amen. So we will now stop sharing. And you are invited, as you are moved to do so, to raise your hand and share with us what you received from this passage. So JC, please.
I love that poem. It's been a long time since I've read Living Time, but I remember the huge impact it made on me when I first read it. And,
yes.
The phrase that I heard was, time is a debtor's prison. And I can remember as a boy learning about debtor's prison, and it was a terrifying concept to me, because it's like, if you're in prison, how do you earn the money to pay your debts? And it seemed like an unsolvable paradox. So the idea of time being a debtor's prison to me speaks to the fact that sleep, whether it's literal or metaphorical, is that's borrowed time. Mm-hmm. And it seems like, oh, well, if I just sleep my way through it, then, you know, there'll be less to do when I wake up or whatever. And it's like, that's just, you know, that's a dream, you know. And that poem sort of reminds me of Coleridge's Kublai Khan poem about the stately pleasure dome that he supposedly wrote in an opium dream. And so there's this resistance to waking up, because it seems like it's hard and it's difficult and it's, I'd rather just sleep, you know. And it's, yeah, like, boy, what a prison we put ourselves in when we stay asleep.
Indeed. Thank you, JC. And somewhere in the far reaches of my own memory, I recall that you spoke about this many, many, many years ago, about this very poem. Thank you. How about others of us who have heard this poem many, many years ago? Where does it come to meet us today? Gay.
Well, I heard it first in a work class. Tim Cook read it. In fact, I think he read it more than once. His take on it, or at least my take on his talk about it, was that we need to work as if our house is on fire. And that phrase comes to me occasionally when I want to sleep and close my eyes and just drift, you know. And Cynthia Bourgeau mentions that, you know, how easy it is just to lull ourselves back to sleep. And I guess another part of that, a little different take, my prayer is that I can learn to look at the suffering of this world with open eyes, wide open eyes, and learn to feel love and compassion without having to feel that I, you know, I have to turn away, it's too much, I can't handle it. So that's my prayer.
Indeed, may it be so, Gay. I remember in Vincent Pizzuto's book and his talk, he referred to that as keeping vigil. Keeping vigil, there's something so beautiful and noble and yet bearing the suffering of the world. Thank you. Jack and Jackie, or both.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Like JC, I just absolutely love Living Time. Of all of the workbooks, that is my personal favorite, which I've read and reread and reread. I've written on each page so many times I can't even read the passages that I've written on anymore. And the Pentha is the beginning part of that, mm-hmm. of that book. And the question, who do I owe, is what I hear from this. Mm-hmm. And because under the fourth obligonian, striving to pay for my arising as quickly as possible, I owe everybody who gives me the opportunity to work. And that means that this is not something to fear or to avoid, but to welcome as a gift. Because the more opportunities I have, the sooner I will be able to assist our common Father in dealing with the suffering in this world, in this life or the next one or the 100 lives from now that I may recur in. I'm absolutely at peace with whatever it takes. I will pay to the last farthing for that joy.
May I jump in?
Oh, please.
So I remember when I first heard the poem read by Tim, it was just blew me away. And I'm going to be very honest. The idea of recurrence is, I really struggle with that. I see it, the recurrence, in day to day where I make the same mistakes. The idea of recurrence again and again is a really hard thing for me to wrap my head around. Yeah. But tonight, this is interesting. I always felt the last line was a lament. Oh, not Mepenta. Oh, no, it's O, not Mepenta. O-W-E.
Right.
I never got that. And all of a sudden, it's a teaching. It's a teaching. And Dr. Nickel, Tim Cook, Marianne Best, I'm in.
Jack Stamps, I'm in there with you. Thank you. Thank you. Lori, please.
Thank you, Marianne, for inviting us to use our work memory on this book and our experiences with this book. I remember reading it for the first time in a class that was being taught by Tim. And it was, every page was, it put me in a liminal space just to read the book. People have expressed a different imaginal realm, I guess we've been calling it. And I remember raising my hand and saying that. I feel like every page I've read it before. I've seen it and known it before. And Tim said, "You said that last time." And that big laugh of his. And then I also remember in a work class one time, Michael Begeman was leading us. And he said, in response to someone with that twinkly Michael Begeman smile, "God is infinitely generous with recurrence." And both of those things pointed to maybe a little bit about what others have shared, that that it's not a doom, that it's a joy. And it calls, you know, I'm looking at this poem at the end of the email, this wonderful poem that's probably going to be referred to tonight. "I slept and dreamt that life was joy. I awoke and saw that life was duty. I worked and behold, duty was joy." And so it's, it has, when I feel recurrence happening again in my life, it's like, oh, good. You know, this is another opportunity to be free at last and to work. And so I'm grateful. And I pray for all the recurrence that is necessary for me and all of us.
Amen. Amen. Thank you, Lori. And Gloria.
I was touched by the image, the interlocking infinity circles spinning around that seemed so at times like you were out into the cosmos, out of control, but then comes back in contact with another time body moving around, and each one gives you the opportunity to talk to the time body that encountered that before. And it was a very profound image, and I enjoyed it. So thank you.
Thank you, Gloria. And thank you, everyone, for your sharings, for the ponderings in your heart, for your presence as we come together to receive these impressions. So now it is my pleasure to introduce Karen, who will continue to take us on our journey through our time bodies into the meaning of crucifixion and resurrection as it relates to recurrence and change. So thank you and welcome, Karen.
So thank you all. And yes, before we dive into recurrence and all of its wonderful juiciness, let's review homework from last week. There we go, sorry. So as Beverly was leading us through conscious labor and intentional suffering, she invited us to read a former email on that, and on September's email on reciprocal maintenance. And then during your work this week, with the intention of serving all of humanity, to keep in your mind the idea of the exchange of energies with the imaginal realm, how did that impact you? How did that impact your feeling and sense of your work? So what gift came to you this week? What fed you? I'm not too shy to call on people. JC.
So one of the practices that I've been, that sort of came to me this week was, if we're supposed to give up our mechanical suffering in order to intentionally suffer, then first thing we have to do is notice our mechanical suffering. And so what I tried to do was to observe mechanical suffering and see if I could almost take the emotion that I was feeling and apply it to something intentional. In other words, for instance, I was on this 28-day cleanse, my blood pressure dropped, I got off my medication, feeling really great about how healthy I was. And within, you know, a week to 10 days of not even going crazy back to my usual diet, but just eating sort of normal foods, the blood pressure started going back up. And I noticed that, you know, I got this cuff and I was taking it, you know, 4 or 5 times a day. And if it wasn't, you know, depending on what the number was, it was like, oh, geez, man. What the hell, you know, and I can't believe it's 58, or you know, and it's, ah, look at that. Okay, there it is. There's the mechanical suffering that, you know, no matter what I feel like, this number is telling me I'm in bad shape. And I was able to, I won't say every time, but probably 2 or 3 times, to be able to just really let go of the number, feel into my body. I don't feel like I'm dying. I feel fine. What is it that I would like to transmute here? What is it that I would like to... how could I use this concern about my health in an intentional way? And what sort of came to me was, you know, there are people all over this planet who would love to trade ailments with me right now. And can I let go of my little chattering worry about this number and just feel into the fact that all over the planet there are people who are really feeling pain and feeling the terror of maybe being near death or being powerless to have, you know, at least I have something I can do about this. So it was a very powerful experience that you know, and it sort of takes you out of it takes you out of 96 and connects you to 24. Mm-hmm. And so I wish to continue with that practice.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, I heard in that if you know how to suffer, you wouldn't suffer. You know, good on you. And good on you for watching your health. We want you around a long time. Thank you. Jackie or Lee?
It's me.
Thank you. Hi.
Sunday morning, Lee and I had no idea that a man had shot and killed 3 people just a short distance from our apartment. Lee and I took a walk through our apartments after Sunday service and came face to face with a SWAT team in full combat dress, carrying assault weapons that loudly told us to turn around, return to our apartment, and shelter in place. I immediately observed a shudder of fear running through my body, and to my surprise, seeing my hands rise toward the sky to show them I was unarmed. Mm-hmm. I've never been arrested before. I don't know how that happened. My body just did it on its own. A while later, I remembered to use the welcoming prayer to bring myself back to center and to pray for the gunmen, the victims' families, and all involved, while self-remembering that God and higher influence were present in each moment. I knew then that this act of self-remembering would serve humanity, future, and past. Mm-hmm.
Mm. Oh, thank you. We hold the suffering of all. And as Jackie pointed out earlier, you know, to help ease the suffering of our common Father, because he suffers with us. Thank you. Thank you. Mm-hmm. We have time for one more. Yes, Marnie.
Hi, friends. I worked this week with holding this idea of the future up ahead, kind of holding that as an intention throughout the day. And the two, I noticed two things specifically that were a different quality to my work, one of which was an increased patience with people in my life, just having this idea of serving the future of what, in particular, I noticed it with my son. And of course, his future is very important to me, but the idea of sacrificing for his future just helped me to stay patient with him and stay present in a way that I wasn't expecting to be part of. Just the simple idea of holding the future up ahead as part of my intention for the day. And then the second thing I noticed was it gave me a sense of boldness to do some things that that were really outside of what I'm comfortable doing. And again, it was that thought that in doing this, I'm serving the future. It's not about me. It was this, there was this freedom in it to just serve, and the self just kind of, it just wasn't important at that moment. The greater good was what was driving the action, not, oh, this is something I really am uncomfortable doing. It all that just kind of dropped away, which it was in observing these two things in play this week were just, it was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm grateful for the homework prompt. It was a good week.
Good work. Good work. Thank you. And Deborah Jean, we'll end with you.
Thank you. I too had my daughter-in-law and her sister were walking towards Starbucks when the shooting occurred, and they had left about 10 minutes later than they had intended. And that shock that kind of resonates in your body when something like that occurs, and you realize at any moment, life can be very different. There was a piece of artwork that I saw that just captivated me. And it was during the time when I was going through cancer treatment. And I had worked years ago at hospice. And I really had this, one of the things I took from that was that people that choose to stay conscious during their death and really stay with themselves. And then others that just either can't or don't, and you know, no judgment on that. It's just watching the people that very intentionally try to clean up parts of their life. And so that was a real gift to me during that time. And so I was in Santa Fe, and I could not get this image and that piece of artwork out of my head for anything all week long after last week's lesson. It was a woman standing there with her arms tied, and she's in front of a firing squad. And these are kind of whimsical figures. So this artist, I bought several of his pieces because they were very, this guy just spoke to me. And the title of the piece, she's pulling her blindfold off, it was entitled Refusing the Blindfold. And I could not take my eyes off that. And I finally ended up going back, and he didn't have one. And I sort of let it go, but I recently had contacted him again. And when I get another paycheck, I was going to buy that painting. And because it's what we do in the work, and it is that intentional suffering of choosing to stay awake when it's difficult, of choosing to keep, when you're in the garden, to sit with Christ when he is afraid and he's the leader and he's shaken, to sit with somebody. One of my dearest friends that I just got off the phone with lost 2 of her 3 children. And they both died at different times. One was as an infant, was born encephalic. Her other son, who was my godson, died of esophageal cancer. And I went out and helped her, watching her intentionally suffer through and make his death meaningful, and allowing all of his friends and me to be a part of that. And it really took this monumental effort on her part of pure love. And to me, that's that thing that you were talking about, is in that gift, the gift she gave all of us in that intentional suffering, and watching those people at hospice, all of those people have added to what I heard last week and what I took away from it. And this week has been a hard week for me physically, and a lot of doctors and stuff. And again, it was that thing of stay awake in this. Stay awake. This is the moment you have. And honestly, when we welcome it, like so many of you have said, it becomes so alive and spacious. And the pain becomes something else, or the discomfort or the hurt. It becomes something else. It becomes a flame almost that energizes us. So I thank you for the work last week. And this was a perfect time too. It really was. So I refuse the blindfold this week.
Good on you. Absolutely. Well, thank you all for your sharing and feeding everybody. It's a banquet, and we're all here. So like I said, tonight's topic is recurrence. And the picture there that a couple of you have spoken of is a depiction of Ezekiel 10, where he talks about a wheel within a wheel. Symbols speak to us and can feed us tremendously. And certainly the email dove into the esoteric side of this teaching, which is remarkable. And please, by all means, read Living Time. What an incredible book. The dictionary tells us recurrence just means things that happen over and over again. And we are aware of things, and several of you have raised these up in tonight. But what I really want to talk about is that definite, topical, concrete application of the idea, as so many of our leaders have talked about, putting it on, put it on your bones. And many of us have studied this poem before, but do you know what Nepenthe is? It's described in Homer's Odyssey. It's the drug that banishes trouble from your mind. So today we probably call it Versed. It helps to induce forgetfulness. Time, again, is that debtor's prison. In work language, then, we would call all of this our mechanical associations, our identifications, our very unconscious behavior. So if we wish not to owe Nepenthe, and O-W-E, as Jack pointed out, we need to increase our consciousness and observe our recurrences. We want to pay that utmost farthing. So yeah, repetition's natural. You know, it occurs around us all the time. We see that night follows day and seasons, you know, change. And frankly, the speakers in the school, you know, there are recurrences everywhere. But if we can use our self-observation, then we begin to see the recurrences that happen within our very lives. It's not just a work idea. It really is a very ancient one. And Jesus in Matthew 19:28, when he's talking to his disciples, uses a term that in the ancient Greek is frequently translated regeneration. But for those who read ancient Greek, and that's not me, say that it's more clearly translated to mean repeated existence or repeated birth. And so, as so many things, recurrence is given to us as a gift. It's a part of our conscious labor for change. Now, as all things in the work, we can look at it with scale. It occurs microscopically in our very cells all the time, but inside our life with our thoughts and our feelings. And then macroscopically with our behaviors, our gestures, our hands, our facial expressions, the things that we use all the time. And then cosmically, it happens all around us as we travel around the sun every year. So we've spoken before of the importance of creating new neural pathways, breaking old habits of thought. Because if we make our old reality over and over again, you know, we won't have change. We don't change until we begin to think in a new way. Our lives repeat the same patterns, and frankly, our behavior gets pretty predictable. So if you ever hear somebody, your spouse, your friend, your work partner say, "You always," or "You never," that's a tap on the shoulder to say, observe your repetition of your behavior. But the key, as ever, is self-observation, non-identification, self-remembering. It is the way out of our mechanical recurring behaviors. We can change our thinking, metanoia. Then we change our behavior and we change our life, past, present, and future. We really need to understand that even what we think has an impact on the world. So to heal our past, we work now. To heal our future, we work now. And as Bev raised up with us a couple weeks ago, we really need to be open to what's real, what's true. Because our thoughts and feelings will create the exact same state of being that supports our thoughts and feelings. Over and over again, we create the same reality. If we don't change, then we can't expect a new outcome. And frankly, isn't that the definition of insanity? To continue to do the same thing, but expect a different outcome. So our being draws our life. So we want to change the mechanical recurring patterns of our life. We change our level of being. Now, that means so much more than physical. That's more than losing weight, changing jobs, going on a cleanse. It's energetic. Madame de Salzman says that we must learn to harmonize our energies, that we must learn to vibrate with the music of the spheres. Those who play musical instruments know this when they're tuning them. Or those who've gone to a symphony, that you hear the vibrations begin to harmonize when the notes or the key is correct. This is a way she looks at conscious labor and intentional suffering. She goes on to say, through suffering, the intention becomes voluntary, and the intensity of its will can produce an opening of the body to finer energy. Everything depends on this opening. Then a force from above can act. My state is transformed. This new energy is a conscious force that needs to be present if I am not to be retaken by my automatism. So we engage that first conscious shock. We apply work ideas to our incoming impressions so that we're not taken by our automatism, our mechanical associations. I have an eye, and many of you do, I know, but this one goes, "You're in trouble." It's recurrent. I can observe this one way back into early childhood and frankly, right up to today. It has strong associated emotions and sensations and thoughts. So again, if I wish to heal not only my past, but my present, I need to work. So a few days ago, I came home much later than I intended, and I heard this eye start its song with all the accompanying thoughts and feelings and sensations before I even got out of the car. Some opportunity, you know, bring up those work ideas, take in that impression in a new way. So ideas like, this is not I, you know, this is the little girl that didn't want to get in trouble. Or, I have the right not to be negative. I can ask myself, is this true? And I added a caveat to that piece, and Byron Katie, forgive me. And so what if it is? You know, what am I without this thought? I have to remember, we all have to remember, that these eyes want to bring us down. They want us to stay mechanical. That is their whole goal in their life. So I can ask that eye what someone's response to me has to do with me, as a paraphrase of Christ's response at the wedding at Cana. Or I can use an AA aphorism. Someone's opinion of me is none of my business. But the important thing here is to observe the pattern, the recurrence, because if I change my response, I change my behavior. And that's where I begin to change my past, my present, and my future. Words can imprison us, memories can imprison us. And they imprison us in that debtor's prison of associations, all of our mechanical habitual thinking. This is what we must observe. St. Paul says to put on the new man, we must put off the old in Ephesians. And to me, that means it's necessary to die to one level of being in order to rise to another. So enough of me just talking. Let's put something up here to look at. Back, I think it was October 1st, we had a discussion on the review of the cosmology, and we brought up the notes of the octave on the ray of creation. This is a slide from that talk. So do is, whoops, sorry. There we go. I'll take my fingers off the keyboard. Do is valuation of work ideas. That's why we're all here tonight. Re is the application of the ideas to ourselves. That's what we do when we engage the homework or share in the group or set a daily aim. And me is personal difficulty, what we also call second force. So did I hit an obstacle that caught me with an identification? Without the first conscious shock, we can't pass the mi-fa interval. So we repeat, do, re, mi, do, re, mi, do, re, mi. I want to work. I try to work. I get identified. I want to work. I try to work. I get identified over and over again. And this keeps me in World 48. But it is important to remember the principle of learning for all of us humans is we require repetition. And Jackie said, you know, recurrence is a gift. It is a gift. We need this repetition before that proverbial light comes on. So every time an event pokes me into a mechanical association, I have a small measure of time to self-observe and not identify. Of course, I can react in my old usual pattern and repeat do-re-mi, but I can work. I can apply the first conscious shock and pass to fa and understand. Now remember, the work defines understanding as knowledge applied to being. So what I can understand is it's not being done to me, it's just being done. Now, let me be very clear. The work says we are not to accept abuse. But I can bear the unpleasant manifestation of another's multiplicity because I know my own. Then I can pass to world 24, the imaginal realm, and maybe even to 12. Once we get a little free from our imaginary eye and all of its truly tiresome manifestations, all of its same behaviors, same attitudes, same phrases, same gestures, we begin to touch real I. The work teaches life is a circle. Death is the entryway to birth. So during life, between birth and death, we need to work. Because if nothing's changed, if nothing's been brought into our consciousness, we enter back into the same kind of life. But if we work on ourselves, change our level of being, then we change our lives. We do change the past. I know that's kind of a hard concept to get your head around, but in exploring our time bodies, we began this work. And because we're not the same children as we were before, our parents aren't the same parents. I was given the gift of time at the end of my father's life to heal our past. He'd been the big angry man to my little girl. And I carried that reaction well into my adult life to all big men. And frankly, most of them were gentle. I didn't deserve that reaction. But by the time my father died, we had a kind and loving relationship. I was no longer the same child, so he won't be the same parent. I'm changed, and I'll be a different parent to my children. This is the way we begin to heal the sins of the father. From one generation to the next. Now, let me pause all the talking and see if there are any insights, questions, concerns. So far, so good. Yes, Gay.
Well, I want to speak to something that has been present with me, I guess, all my life, but at least I've been awake to it for a few years now that I've been in the work, and that is these recurring eyes. And I'm going to pick out one in particular, like you picked out the one that says, I'm in trouble. Mine has to do with impatience, particularly with other people, also with myself. And this has come up frequently in the last 2 or 3 weeks. So a couple of days ago, I experienced it. And here's what I observed, several things. I went into a merchant to get a problem solved. I had been with that merchant on the phone and understood that all I needed to do is go in and do X, Y, Z and show him my identification and that, well, it didn't work out that way. And I ended up having to wait and wait and wait. And this has come up lately a lot. So I thought I was armed with the work. And it began work-wise very well. I observed the eye that wanted to be impatient. And by that, I mean that wanted to put her hands on her hips and say, you know, who do you think you are? Don't you know that my time is back? All of that stuff. And then the other eye would say, you know, you don't have anything else to do today. Why not just stand here and be calm? You could, you know, you could do some yoga exercises. And yet that eye was very persistent. And the sad news is that, first of all, what I observed is intellectually, I knew what to do. Intellectually, I knew the work aphorisms. I knew that I was going to make myself suffer if I went with this eye. And yet it seems to me like, I don't remember how the work states it, but the emotions are so much faster than the intellect. And eventually, after waiting for quite a while, those emotions took over. And what I can say is, just as a matter of understanding, and this has been, I guess, fairly recent, especially since I've read Joe Dispenza, is those neural pathways, I've been working on those a long, long time, and they're very, very deep grooves. And it's really easy to go there really fast. So one piece of really good news for me was when I picked up Beryl Pogson's book called The Work Life. And in there, she has a little table of how to deal with negative emotions. And I go back to that and I forget about it, but then I go back again. But she says, if these negative emotions are just on the outer parts of center, then you just don't express them. The middle parts of center, you self-observe, non-identify, self-remember. If they are on the inner part of my negative emotional center, or my emotional center, and they are negative and they've been there for a long time, sometimes the only answer is prayer. Mm-hmm. That was such a relief to me, because otherwise, yeah, I begin to feel like a failure at this sometimes, you know? It's not what I want to be. It's not the way I want to behave. And yet sometimes that's the way I behave. So after this experience a couple of days ago, I went back to Beryl Pogson and I thought, okay, God, all I can do is say, help, help me. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be this way. Please help. So that's just something I've been experiencing lately.
Well, thank you for sharing all of that. I would remind you to have mercy on you. You know, I think we're very harsh on ourselves. We expect ourselves to be such good work students, and we are, because we're here. But no, we can't work every day all the time. And especially if Second Source is as big as that. You know, you're just, but just have mercy on you. Thank you, Kay. Nicole, please.
I'm glad Gay shared that. What I kept hearing is, we need to do this. We have to do this. We need to work like our house is on fire. And it kind of like Gay, it's like all that pressure. I need, you know. But with my struggles this past week, it's like we do the work, we study, we apply it to our being. But really what I observed with the recurrence and seeing it over and over again is the different behavior. That was through the grace of God. I had done the work to open myself, but I didn't do it. And that's what I heard from Gay, is like, yeah, I catch myself in the other, but that's part of the work, is seeing it. That's all I have to do, is see it, right. Study, prayer, but I'm not doing it. And that was, what a relief, you know, it's not yes. me. Thank yes. you.
Thank you. Yes, the working like your house is on fire used to sound pretty harsh to me. And it came to me one day that that's just saying, smell the smoke, wake up and get out of the burning edifice. We're just being asked over and over again to just wake up. Just wake up. Thank you. Gloria.
Thank you. I find the recurrences so much less impactful, and it's almost a freeing thing to do the inquiries. And usually just questions one and two is all I need. And mm-hmm. I have had several challenges in every area of my life, like every one of us had. And the opportunity to use those techniques on no matter what it is mind-boggling, just mind-boggling and so freeing, because otherwise, you know, you go down the rabbit holes of pity parties and mechanical thinking and just back and back and go, I don't have to think like that. You know what a gift it is. And as I believe it was Byron Katie said, when you argue with reality, you never win.
Exactly. Only 100% of the time.
For last week for bringing up that there is a new branch of psychology called self-inquiry. And I want to do more reading and research on that, because I think so many times with the cognitive-based therapy stuff, it just doesn't quite get the people, or you, me, when I'm doing it, I don't quite get the buy-in and the hook in that I get whenever I ask these questions this way as self-inquiry. So I think it's a wonderful, beautiful, freeing tool. Thank you so much.
Oh yes, yeah. Bev gave us quite a treat there. Dennis, we'll end with you, and then I've just got a little bit more to say.
Okay, hi, Karen.
Hi.
I was thinking about when you were talking about parents and things that have come up with parents and how you thought about your dad and whatnot. And about a year ago, well, my mother turned 100. She passed about a year ago. And I was never really close to her. And I wouldn't visit her, but, you know, maybe once or twice a year and that sort of thing. And I always felt somewhat uncomfortable because I didn't know what to say. And I could say, I think a lot about some of the negative things that during my past. But I noticed as I was sitting with her at one time, I decided I would just sit and experience whatever came up. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't know exactly what to say. So I would sit with her and I'd put my arm around her and stuff. And which is kind of, she didn't have Alzheimer's, but she, I would say dementia. And would just talk mm-hmm. about pictures. And she had, you know, I had 8 siblings and whatnot. She'd lived a long life. Mm-hmm. And it occurred to me as I sat with her that she was very childlike. And it occurred to me like this was not the mother that I had growing up. Mm-hmm. Whatever it was, the issues that I had with her, they weren't there. She was just, you know, somebody different, someone who's living out the last years of her life. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think it was very sweet. I don't think I ever heard her say, I love you. But I realized some of the things that she said meant that. Mm-hmm. She would say, God bless you. Mm-hmm. And so I thought to me that that was her telling me that she loved me.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yes.
So I think it helped change the past and hopefully the future as well.
Undoubtedly. Undoubtedly. Yeah.
Well, thank you.
And frankly, I think one of the best gifts you could have ever given your mother was just your presence, just mm-hmm. you being there. What a beautiful thing to give.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. Well, let me go back to the slides. And there may be time for a few more later if... I don't get too long-winded here. Whoops. Doesn't want to work. Why not? There we go. All right. So Doctor Who is a BBC science fiction show. It began back in the 60s, still running. The Doctor is a time traveler. And I'd like to quote him or her. She's a her now. Time is subjective. It is not a fixed constant. People assume that time is a strict progression from cause to effect, but actually in a non-linear, non-subjective viewpoint, it's more like a big ball of wibbly wobbly timey wimey stuff. But our perception of time as somebody standing so close to that big ball of wibbly wobbly timey wimey stuff, all we can see is one strand. And that strand looks very straight from birth to death. But remember, the work says time's not a straight line. So another way to explore the nonlinear quality of time is the Enneagram. Now, this is the ancient symbol. The triangle 369 was added to it later for another reason. But the Enneagram, this symbol, is given no less than 14 different commentaries in volume 2. Dr. Nickel starts those on page 379 for anyone who wants to explore them. And he said that Gurdjieff thought that it, the Enneagram, formulated all the teaching, and that the more a person could read its meanings, the more deeply that person understood the work. That it, the Enneagram, represented the union of the law of three and the law of seven. That it is a moving diagram, and it must fall on higher parts of centers. That the Enneagram gives a rise to an extraordinary relationship. So I'd like to review an example that's given in the commentaries. And you can apply this. It's an interesting thought experiment. Take something that occurs in succession, such as the days of the week, and put them on the Enneagram. So if you put Monday at 1, Tuesday at 2, Wednesday at 4, keep going around, Sunday will fall where 9 would be. Sunday's at the top. So then pick an event and see how the days actually interact with each other to change your idea that time is not a straight line. So what happened on Monday is related to what will happen on Wednesday, and that will go back to Tuesday, and that further will be related to what goes to Saturday. So 1 goes down to 4, goes up to 2, goes over to 8, okay? Again, just an idea, a way to look at time so that you understand time is always now. There really isn't a past and a future. It's always now. Yesterday was its own today. Okay. Everything is actually only now. Recurrence, again, is a gift. It helps us to understand that what we do and what we think affects not only us, but people past, present, and future. Ecclesiastes 1:9 says, "What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again, that there is nothing new under the sun." But what has been done depends entirely on whether we work to self-observe, not identify, and self-remember, because then we change and everything else will change in connection with us. Again, a few weeks ago, Peter recommended reading Living Time, and several people have said so today. I invite you to dive into that book. It is a deep read. So for your first pass, Just take it in, let it fall. You'll be confused. Be confused. It's perfectly all right. And then read it again. Give it some time to come and ferment, and then go read it again. There were some symbols in the email to give you an idea of ways to think about time. And again, symbols speak to our emotional center. They speak a language all their own. So it's important to spend some time just sitting with some symbols. And before I get into the homework, I would like to give you a heads up. Next week is a pause and review. So I plan to follow Peter's example that he used a few weeks ago and have it be almost all a time of sharing. I'd like to use an image Father Carl gave us. Heaven and hell are banquets, and we're all there with our arms outstretched. But in hell, we tried to feed ourselves. In heaven, we feed each other. So I look so forward to the sharing of that banquet with you next week as we feed each other. And let's get into homework here, and then we'll go back for more comments. So please read the commentary on page 752, A Note on Recurrence. And remember, this is ongoing time body work. So what are your recurring themes in your lives? We've talked about some of our eyes that we've seen that happen over and over again. Watch and observe. Reflect on an image, especially the one from Ezekiel. What are the wheels within the wheels of your life? And as always, work with delight. Nicole said it sounds like so much ordering. You should, you have to, you must. Well, yes. Because we wish to work, we wish to engage, but do it with lightness. The work is truly a gift, and all of these tools and techniques are meant to free us from our nepenthe and get us out of our debtor's prison. So there we go, back to everyone. So I didn't mean to cut the comments quite as short as I did. So anyone else have something they wish to say or ask or feed all of us? Mark, please.
So like Jack, it's always been a level of discomfort with the idea of recurrence. But I do remember reading somewhere, it might have been in Living Time or somewhere else in Nicole or Spensky, about the idea of deja vus and how deja vus could be a flash of a memory from previous recurrence. And I was really struck by that. And I used to have pretty frequent deja vus. I mean, some of them jarring enough that, for a few seconds I would be like wobbly, just the force of the deja vu. But now it's been a number of years since I've had any that were jarring like that. So,
I believe it is in the commentary that Dr. Nicol talks about deja vu as again, that poke from a former turn around the sun, so to speak. I think of the recurrence lifetimes as again a gift, but the fact that we have eternity, this is infinite. I don't have to get it all in this lifetime, but the more I get, the better. I wish to be as conscious as possible, but I have eternity. So I got forever. I'll get there. And you will too. And I look forward to being there with you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Jack or Jackie.
Yeah, it's me again. Recurrence topic, they call it.
You know, yeah.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you so much. Deja vu and a sense of scale are things that I experienced in my younger days. I remember sitting in mechanical drawing class, kind of in the days, looking at my foot, and then all of a sudden the scale of what I was seeing expanded before me. Mm-hmm. Like my foot became miles away. And I had deja vu repeatedly into my teens. And my experience is that, or my understanding is that that's remnants of my personality and essence. Remnants of my essence. And remnants of what we're talking about tonight, mm-hmm. that has been covered over by like an onion of the coverings of my personality, of my enculturation, mm-hmm. of my don't believe that, that's nutty stuff. Nah, that's the real stuff. Mark, thank you so much. You're right on.
Absolutely. You know, I've wondered when did I encounter the work before? How old was I? Did I encounter it later? And now I'm getting younger and younger as I have encountered it. Scale is a beautiful thing to help us see the bigger picture, so to speak. Yeah, thank you, Jack.
Yeah. Thank
you. We have time for another. This is a big topic. It is complex. And I hope it has encouraged everyone to just think about it. And again, like all things, it's a ferment. Take it in, struggle with it. And it will feed you. Yes, Deborah Jean.
Karen, can you talk a little bit about scale? I had heard that from my work partner, but I don't quite understand it. I haven't quite gotten that yet. Thank you.
I can try, yes. So in this particular talk, what I was meaning by scale is that the recurrence of my life as Karen's life, that's a big scale out here to me. And again, in infinity. But I can bring that down to something personally applicable into the recurrence of my inner feelings. You know, what are my emotions and thoughts that are running the personality show? My outer experiences, my hands, how much of this am I doing? What kind of faces do I always make? What are my recurrent behaviors? And then I can see the recurrence that occurs in a cosmic scale, say the seasons, the days, whatever. So that's the way I'm using scale for this. Certainly the ray of creation is a scale. Can I start with my aim, my dough, and then bring the work ideas to me at ray, meet my difficulty, my second force at me. Apply that first conscious shock and go on to fa. Well, that's every day and every little thing, whether I'm like Gay going to a local merchant to work out something and doggone it, it's now become this problem. There's that scale. And then like JC said, the scale that there are 7 billion people on this planet who may be experiencing the same thing I'm experiencing, or as JC said, would trade with me in a heartbeat. So that's kind of a way to explain how I'm using scale tonight in particular, but does that help clarify for you? Okay.
Yeah,
It can also mean relative value, essentially, making important things important. That's a common usage of the term.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen.
We have time for one more brief one, if anyone else wishes to. Nicole.
Okay, the one thing about recurrence that's always bothered me is I don't want to relive my childhood. Beyond that, it's okay. But up until I was 17 and left house, I mean, seriously, it's like a huge upsetting thing when I hear about reincarnation and recurrence. But then I realized the selfishness in it. If I'm really working not just for myself, but you know, for the less than, or you know, if just everybody, that it's like that's really ego fearing or my false self. So I every once in a while get to the point where it's okay. If it's beneficial to God, if it's beneficial to others, I will do it. So anyway, I just have to share that because that really gets to me. Is the ideal that I will have to, and I've shared it with Tim one time, and he goes, and that's why I'm going straight vertical. I'm working my way out of here. And so the idea of dying soon is scary because it's like, no, I want to get vertical so I don't have to come back here like that. Anyway, I'm just anchoring that outside of myself. So thank
absolutely
you.
Absolutely. And I would just suggest, Nicole, that you are not the same person. You have changed. You're working. You're bringing consciousness into your being. You know, so you are not the same. You will be different because that's part of the gift of recurrence as well. Well, thank you, everyone. I appreciated all of the sharings and look forward to seeing you again next week. Thank you, Marianne.
Thank you so much, Karen, and everyone in your sharings. A closing word from Rodney Collin. We stand our ladder of progress on experience. We fail again and again, but mistakes push us up. We would make even more mistake if we had no experience. Unless we are very much awake, we cannot profit by someone else's experience. If we could not deal with everything that comes to us, God would not allow it to come. There are stages in our lives. Sometimes we are not prepared for them. For this reason, she who faithfully works more easily endures the tribulations. She whose gift cost her nothing will receive nothing of value in return. So let us join together in praying aloud in gratitude, wherever we are, the prayer of God's love. God's love has always met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully. And how blessed I am to simply remember God. Protect us, Lord, as we stay awake, and watch over us as we sleep. That awake we can keep watch with Christ, and to sleep, rest in Christ's peace. Amen.